Hi, I'm Doug Keck, and welcome to The Catholic Sphere. You know, each week we tackle topics important to Catholics around the globe with a different host and a different focus. And this week our subject is, in fact, theology, the topic, the role of the laity in secular affairs. Today we are joined by author, philosopher, and mother, Carrie Gress. She joins us from Virginia. We also have an author and former secretary for the public affairs of the National Conference of Catholic Bishops, and that is Russell Shaw. He joins us from Maryland. And finally, we're joined by, as always, EWTN's Vice President of Theology, Colin Donovan. He is with us in our theology studio. And welcome to this august body. It's great to have both of you, Carrie Gress, Russell Shaw, and of course, Colin, with us talking about the laity. Well, let me ask you, Russ, you've been have been involved with writing about the laity for a long time and the role of the laity in relation to the church post-Vatican II. And I have to always call out a wonderful book I read by yours called Ministry or Apostolate, which really talked about the differentiation between those two. Let me ask you first, why have you always been so interested in the role of the laity?
Well, I have a personal interest in being a layman. I think a lot of it in recent years comes from the fact that, professionally speaking, I spent a long time working with clerics, and almost without exception, they were all really good guys, and I enjoyed working with them. But I began to realize that there were, what shall I say, built-in tension points between me as a layman and them as priests, as members of the clergy, priests, bishops, sometimes archbishops and cardinals. I repeat, they were all great guys, but there was a great gulf between me and them by reason of the difference in state and life, and the fact that they were ordained and I was just a simple layman. Well, I'm still a simple layman, but I'd like to understand the relationship between the clerics and the clergy and then the laity a bit better than we've been understanding it for some years now.
Right. Now, Carrie, you're an author of multiple books, including the latest, greatest, a really powerful book, End of Woman. Now, as a woman dealing from the lay perspective in relation to the church, you probably even have a different experience, right?
Yeah, well, I think my experience in a lot of ways is formed by the culture, because the church has taken on a lot of what the culture has said about women. And of course, you know, so many of us are confused about what that means. And, you know, as I talk about in my book, The End of Woman, one of the real struggles is that feminism has told women to actually be more like men. That was actually the question that it has been asking since the beginning, is how do we make women more like men? So I think this is the real struggle, is sort of sorting out what does it mean to be a woman? And how do we live that out in our lives as lay women in the church? And, you know, we have so many beautiful saints. We have so much beautiful writing about women. And so it's been a real great pleasure to actually dive into some of that and bring some of that back out for women to really start wondering, or living in wonder about what it means to be a woman, instead of feeling like we need to keep aping the virtues of the masculine.
Right. It's interesting, too, Colin, because as one article I read in relation to this, considering we had done the show previously about the priesthood, it mentioned that the most pernicious and widespread form of clericalism in the church today is the irrepressible belief that the measure of a layperson is his or her proximity to clerical power. It continues to run rampant. It's an idea, unfortunately, spread mostly by many in the laity. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think there is obviously, as we all would express, there's a great admiration for the clergy and for the work that they do. I think what is less clear since Vatican II, and it's not the fault of the Vatican II documents or any of the magisterial teaching, is recognizing that there is a necessary and essential distinctions between the apostolate of the clergy through holy orders, which is to form the church in the likeness of Christ in holiness. And then in the case of the laity, our apostolate is then to the world in secular affairs and to that. Yes, there are many things we can do for the apostolate of the church in very particular ways, but generally that's not open to most laity. They're dealing with business colleagues, or maybe they're dealing with employees or their employer, or with some other secular relationship in the political world. And so they must bring Christ to those individuals, to the unchurched and the worldly, in a different way than the clergy does, trying to build up the church. Now, clergy obviously are called to evangelize the world. That was the admonition of Christ on the day of the Ascension, to go forth to teach, to sanctify, and to govern. And they do that, but they do it in this process, forming the church. We do it in forming the world. Carrie and myself are both parents. Russell, I don't know you. You probably had some children. We had to form those children for life in the world, to have a Christian attitude to dealing with the problems they will encounter as students, as business people, as professors, whatever job that they do in the world. To have the grace and equanimity in to do that in a way which puts Christ forth in the secular world. So there's essential differences between the two, and there really is no reason for envy of the other, but that's a natural human fault, and so we have fallen into it, I think, especially since Vatican II and the misunderstandings of what the Church actually taught there.
Right. Carrie, to follow up on that, the idea of the role of the laity is essential for the ordering of culture. Why is that your perspective?
Yeah, no, I think this is one of these questions that we don't ask enough about, is that the role that the laity plays in the culture. Because, of course, you know, you look at a place like Europe, and why do people love Europe? I've lived there several different times in different countries, and it's because of the influx of Catholic culture that has animated the architecture, the art, the order in the cities, all of those kinds of things. And we don't really think of these things as aspects of our vocation as lay men and women. And yet these are the beautiful treasures that the Church has passed down to us. And it doesn't have to be things on a grand scale. It can also just be ways in which we bring beauty into the world through products and commerce. It can be in music and education, all of these different ways, but we're going to be able to reach out, you know, much further than clergy can, just given the natural order in which the laity live. And the other area I think that's important for us to be mindful of is also being patrons of these things, and that's historically been by the laity that has promoted the arts and architecture and, you know, all of these things that are part of our patrimony.
Right, right. Support beauty, which has been a little bit lost in our world, I would think, too. Let me get back to you, Russ, on the idea, like I said, that book that really struck me, Ministry or Apostolate. What is the distinction between those two? Because it seems to me there's a lot of confusion among lay people about those two functions, thinking they're basically the same, but they're not.
No, they're not. They're quite distinct. A little history would help a lot to shed a great deal of light on what the question you're asking. Let's go back to Vatican II again. We've been talking about Vatican II. Vatican II did a great thing for the idea and understanding of the lay apostolate, both the individual apostolate and the organized or group apostolate, both encompassed in what Vatican II had to say. And it said that the specific apostolate of the laity, whether individually or through group action, was to bring Christ and the gospel into sectors of society where they were not present, where Christ and the gospel were not present, but the laity were present, and to make the presence of Christ a living reality in the midst of the secular world. That is the essence of the lay apostolate, according to Vatican II. And the Council wanted to make it clear, and did make it clear, although we've tended to forget it, that this apostolate of the laity did not come to the laity by reason of delegation or concession on the part of the clergy, that it was an intrinsic responsibility of lay people as a result of their baptism and confirmation. In other words, the calling to lay apostolate comes to a lay person through his or her baptism and not in some other way. That had never been said with such authority and on such a level in the Church until Vatican II and the Pope said it together. Several years after Vatican II, though, something strange happened as far as apostolate and ministry are concerned. Pope Paul VI published a document then on ministries. It was a good document, and the Pope meant only the best for the church and for everybody concerned by the issuance of this document on ministry. In it, he said that there were several ministries which lay people could perform. And he said those were in the ministries essentially of a liturgical nature, lector, minister of communion, mm-hmm. and a couple of others at that time, and some others have been added since. In fact, since the issuance of that document on ministry by Pope Paul, there's been very little to nothing said about lay apostolate, the responsibility of lay people to bring Christ into the secular society. And almost all of the attention has gone to lay ministry. And it's become a universal expression to cover everything that lay people do, everything good that lay people do in the church. Mm-hmm. Ministry is something good that lay people do in the setting of the church, in their parish or in some other Catholic institution. As for lay apostolate, what's that? We don't hear anything about that anymore. All we do hear is lay ministry. Mm-hmm. And the progress, if you will, the promotion of the Catholic laity is understood to come about by opening up to them more and more ministries, not by getting into the lay apostolate out there in the secular world, but rather by doing more and more in the context of the institutional hierarchical church.
Right. Mm-hmm. With that being the case, I think sometimes when people think of apostolate, they think like E.W. Tien or, you know, Father Mike Schmitz or somebody else, a big thing, rather than just being an outreach that actually necessarily comes out even in the parish setting. One article I read said, what is the role of the laity then? It's basically the simplest way is to be the ambassadors of Christ in the secular world. And the idea lay people should be plugged into the parish, diocesan life, frequent reception of sacraments, faith formation, etc. Yet after being nourished and strengthened by these, lay Catholics must go forth, as we're told at the end of the Mass, glorifying the Lord by our lives in the world. That's our true mission field. Carrie, do you think that that's what we, as lay people, get the general impression we're supposed to be doing?
You know, sadly, I don't. I think that the reality is we cannot give what we don't have. And if we are not taking more of Christ into our life, we're not trying to be like John the Baptist, and, you know, we decrease and he increases, then we don't have Christ to give to others. I also think that we sort of have these boundaries that we've set where we think of the church is one place and our home is another place and the workplace as something else separately, and none of them are meant to sort of overlap. There might be kind of a Venn diagram where they touch on each other, but they're not really part of the same whole. And I think that that's one of the things that is a beautiful element of our faith, is that it's not like it stops at the door when we walk into our workplace or our home, or it only happens at church. And I think that's a really important realization that Catholics need to have and needs to be conveyed, is just how incumbent it is upon us to be continually gifting the faith to others. It's not meant just for us to have and sit on, but for us to actually gift it and spread it with others.
Right, absolutely. And certainly that's the work of E.W. Tien as a lay apostolate, going out into the world and hopefully catechizing Catholics so they feel that empowerment to spread the faith. Right, Colin? I mean, that's why you came to work here, right?
It is, because it's an unparalleled opportunity in my particular case, because Deacon Bill said, well, you can stay and teach a class of, 30 or 60 people, or you can come down to E.W. Tien and teach millions. So eventually that becomes a very persuasive argument. But there's a certain, I think the difficulties often are because we have factions developed in the church that have agendas. And people aren't reading the notes and the details of the Vatican documents, or even the things that the popes have done since, because the church's documents are very generally clear on the kinds of distinctions which are important. The distinction between the sacramental role of the priest in forming the church to be a holy nation, a people set apart. We all participate in that, as Russell said, through baptism. And so by baptism, we are priests, prophets, and kings, but after a different fashion than the clergy. We are priestly because we bring our children, our neighbors, our spouses, ourselves to participate in the liturgy. Prophetic because we are leaven in the world, the Second Vatican Council said, was the role of the laity to be a leaven. Scripture uses the term salt and other expressions to suggest that. So we do that, but through baptism, yes, we can be have ministerial roles in the church, but even there, Paul VI was clear to distinguish between the minor orders such as are a stage of preparation for priestly, diaconal, and then priestly service, and ministries which the laity can perform, usually delegated by the bishop. So the acolyte and the lector as orders or ministries installed are distinct from the roles that most lay people have, serving in parishes after the fashion of acolytes and lectors, altar servers and readers, and so on. But these distinctions get lost because we use the same words for both, and people start to think, well, it's just a, you know, being invited as a married man or even as a woman at some future date as they envision it to fulfill these responsibilities of ministry in the ordained sense in the church. Mm-hmm. Because they've ignored all of the things the church has actually said beyond that which to them seems appropriate. Well, there really is no distinction. We can blur these lines mm-hmm. when the church herself does not actually blur them.
Right, although there are many people post-Vatican II, I would say, right, Russell, who have blurred it themselves in the idea of what the role of the priest actually is as, let's say, presider versus persona Christi. With lay people, you know, when I was a kid growing up, I always thought, you know, and going to Catholic school, kind of like the bishop was the general, the priests were kind of like the officers, the nuns were the drill sergeants, and we were basically, you know, the Army Reserve. You know, we lived our lives during the week, and we got called up on Sunday. But basically, after our Sunday maneuvers, that was really all we had to do. But there's really a much greater call for us as Catholics, isn't it?
There is indeed. It's an all-the-time call. We're always on duty as far as the lay apostolate is concerned. You know, it's perfectly true to say that EWTN is an apostolate, a lay apostolate, largely, mm-hmm. and a very effective and powerful one. But, you know, not all of us can do EWTN all the time. But every lay person has many opportunities in just the ordinary course of living his or her lay life out there in the world. I live in circumstances where I spend a lot of time among non-Catholics, lay people. Mm-hmm. And I find that many of them, knowing me to be a serious practicing Catholic, come to me with things they've read in the newspaper about the church or heard on television about the church, which one way or another put the church in a bad light. And they ask me, you know, in fact, is this true, what you have to say about this? And I take that as a great opportunity to do apostolate, to explain some element of Catholic belief and practice to honest people who don't know the truth about mm-hmm. the Catholic Church and would like to learn something. So I do my bit of apostolate maybe over the dinner table or the lunch table or in many different lay settings with many different good, honest, non-Catholic lay people. It's a very important apostolate, and it's something I just do myself. And I think that it's important that every Catholic be, what shall I say, prepared both intellectually and in terms of motivation to handle those everyday opportunities for doing apostolate, which are going to come up inevitably and over again in your contacts with non-Catholics.
Right. Absolutely. And Carrie, you alluded to the idea of the home and how important the idea is you can't give away what you don't have, and the importance of inculcating the faith into your family, mm-hmm. children, and having a lifestyle that reflects that, right?
Yeah. Well, I think it's vitally important, partially because, you know, the home is called the domestic church. But why is it called that? If we look at the elements of the church and we look at the elements of the home, there's a lot of overlap. In philosophy, we call them the transcendentals. But I've massaged those for my own work in theology of home and really looking at, you know, if you go to church, light is important, safety, nourishment, comfort. You know, even at one point, the congregation is fed the body of Christ, and the priest actually does the dishes at the end of Mass. I was thinking about this morning at Mass, you know, watching the dishes be cleaned at the end of the Mass. And these are all things that happen at home, you know, every day. We moms and people that care for their children are sense and feel the banality of it, and yet this is all so important because this is really forming souls, it's forming the home, it's you're bringing order to it, you're nourishing safety, all these things that you see in the church. And, you know, I think there's something really powerful about the home, especially when the home is being, you know, family is living out in the way that reflects this parallel with the church, because we can't always get people to go to church with us, but it's much easier to get people to come have a meal at our home. And through that gift of hospitality for people to see, you know, there's something different about this family. There's something different about this home. I want more of whatever this is. And I think that's one of the most incredible places of entry, is to invite people into our home and let them see and feel and live the difference of, you know, what the Catholic faith has to offer.
Well, how do you react? I mean, obviously, where you live is a very secular area. You obviously deal with people like Russ does in a non-Catholic, secular kind of world where, and as you talked about in your End of Woman book and some other books about, you know, dealing with like the feminist perspective where people inside the mm-hmm. church look, well, it's very patriarchal and women are not given mm-hmm. a fair shake and the priesthood's not open, etc. How do you deal with people who say, well, how can you be so supportive and involved with a church that's so anti-woman?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that there's some basic questions to start sort of picking away at that argument. One of them is, of course, that we haven't seen women become happier through feminism. And I think that so many of us really realize women are very much focused on the richness of relationships. And this is something that's just fundamental to who we are and this emphasis on it. And I think this is something that obviously the church has to offer, but it offers us more than that. It offers us a sense of motherhood. And I don't just use that word in a biological sense. It offers us both psychological and spiritual motherhood. And the church itself is called a mother. It's, you know, the building itself is referenced as a she in Romance languages. It's the nave, the main part of the church, refers to a ship, which is another one of those female, feminine words in foreign language, in Romance languages. So I think there are a lot of elements that people just never think about. They don't think about these aspects of what it means to be a woman, again, because we've really idolized the masculine. And when you start framing it in this context and help people understand that we have to say something fundamentally about who we are. We have to define ourselves. And the best and most basic way to do that is through motherhood. Again, not just limiting that to the biological. And so we have the example of the church. We have the example of the saints. We have cloistered religious who are frequently called mother. And all of these kinds of things speak to something that I think people are very hungry for. And when you frame it in that way, instead of the typical flashpoints of, you know, left versus right kind of talking points, then people are much more open to it and can think of it without having kind of a knee-jerk reaction to it.
Right. Russell, as a follow-up, because of somebody who kind of deals in the same milieu, and as you mentioned, many non-Catholics you deal with, how do you deal with that, where they kind of look at the church as being regressive and puritanical and holding back and not being open to women, et cetera?
Well, for one thing, I try not to be defensive. I try to admit faults where there are real faults. And certainly when you look at the history of this, as I said to one of my friends the other day when we were having this kind of conversation, you know, the Catholic Church has been around for 2,000 years. And in 2,000 years, just about anything can happen. And believe me, it has. So I don't apologize for the things which are wrong or have been wrong or which are done poorly or done badly. But I also try to correct things which are absolute mistakes when I what shall I say? It's I try to distinguish between the church and its members, if you will, and make the point that the church is a good, sound, solid, immensely edifying and encouraging entity, which was created by Jesus Christ and is sustained by the Holy Spirit, and we're just partners with Christ and the Holy Spirit in this thing called the church. So one of the most important things we can do, I think, in forming the laity for apostolate is to form them well enough on church history and church doctrine to be able to speak intelligently, not to big audiences, but just to individual non-Catholics who come to them with problems, questions, what about this, what's about this scandal, that scandal, this problem, that problem. I repeat, don't be defensive, don't deny that bad things have happened, if they have happened, but don't let mistakes in recounting the past, don't let mistakes and errors pass unchallenged, and be ready to explain really what the church does positively teach and stand for, while admitting the mistakes that some of us have made and continue to make as individuals who fall far short of the ideal.
Okay, we're almost out of time. Colin, I wanted to mention, one article said, we smother lay vocation when we express it in terms of the clerical. It goes on to follow up with what Carrie said, in a sense, mm-hmm. in our own families, it would be unreasonable to expect all children to be exactly alike, and hence, obviously, there's different ministries and different approaches people have. And recognizing the distinction between the roles of laity and clergy also helps us to understand the significance of each vocation. What's your advice to somebody who's trying to find out where they fit into their parish in a ministry or in a vocation way?
Well, and it's not just within their parish, it's within the church. I think in recent centuries, we've gotten more into the idea of what is the particular vocation of the laity. You can go back to Francis de Sales and sort of revising the monastic approach to lay sanctity by in his writings to encourage a more lay situational approach to living. And there are many other apostolates since there, Opus Dei with its to form those who will be leaders in society and so on. But all of this gets down to the basic point that if we see ourselves before God, God is the one who has the right idea of what we are to be and where we are to go and where we are to work. So our discernment is not, well, I've got to be this or I've got to be that. My discernment should be, what does God have planned for me? What's the vocation I'm being called to? Without any envy of the other vocations. I think a lot of people then will have vocational regrets and they'll go off, be sad in the vocation that they've got because they have regrets about their decisions. No, if you proceed carefully, you will sort it out and God will lead you where you're meant to be. And I think that's the difficult part. Yes, you do that with the guidance of a spiritual director or a family member or wise people, Catholics that you know, but nonetheless, it is something that that we do with God. And even the church recognizes that, because the church is there, the bishop is there, the formator in the seminary is there to discern the truth of the vocation which the individual experiences. That's what, to confirm it or to say, I don't think you have it. Well, life does that for us.
Right, and I regret that this show is too short and we are just out of time. We really appreciate you all joining us. Authors Carrie Gress and Russell Shaw, whose books are available through the EWTN Religious Catalog. Of course, Colin Donovan. And we thank you for joining us. And don't forget to join us next week when our host will be Ryan Penny, right here on the Catholic Sphere. We'll see you next time.